You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Live well, win well. It's On Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes, Radio News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Welcome to our panel discussion on why our community must care about climate. And I want Gary Harris to first of all, greet us. Thank you so much, Gary, for assembling this panel together. I want you to just, as we appreciate all that you're doing to really ensure, that we learn and understand more about it. Why is it important that our communities care about climate? Just set the stage for us and tell us about the work that you do as well.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Wanda, for having me. Really do appreciate it. You know, why should our communities care about climate, particularly in light of the elections and particularly in light of climate change getting worse, and typically of our communities really bearing the brunt of these recent storms like Milton and Helene, et cetera. You know, this is why our community must care about climate, because we must build a weather-ready nation for all. And our communities simply are not ready for that next severe storm or that next hurricane or extreme heat event and such. We've got to be prepared, and we've got to be prepared not only from having our communities physically resilient, but in a mindset that says, hey, this is important. We've got to take action. And also we've got to be aware, and we've got to help our neighbor along as well. So why should we care about climate? And because it affects all of us. Whether we're in a faith community or an educator or construction, et cetera, some fashion of climate change is going to affect us. We're seeing sea level rise in some of our major cities, and that's causing folks to have to move and such. Extreme heat, just think about those guys on the tarmac, who are taking your luggage inside and placing it on the carousel, and it's 100 degrees out there. And just think about those wildfires you see almost on a daily basis of what's happening in California, and just think of the misery, the absolute misery that the hurricanes Helene and Milton inflicted on people stretching all the way from Florida to the Appalachia. So why should we care about climate? Because it affects all of us, and that's why we have this panel on today to talk about that, but also the fact that we need to stay the course. We know that there's been an election, and we know that there's change coming, but with change maybe come some opportunity, you know, an opportunity to better educate, and an opportunity to come together as in a collaborative and build stronger coalitions, an opportunity to unite and such. So our panel today, you know, extremely seasoned folks who are doing the work on the front line on a daily basis, they're going to address these issues for us. And
that's
thank
great.
You for having us.
Yeah, and we're glad to have you. You know, I want to welcome all of our panelists, but I'm going to go down the list. Alicia Scott, tell us about the work that you do and address some of these issues that we're facing. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Wanzelin. And thank you, Gary, for having me. So I am a CEO of Coalitico. It's a consulting firm that works with philanthropy on funding grassroots advocacy groups who are working in the climate change and resilience space, as well as the clean energy transition across Georgia. I consult a couple of large philanthropic organizations on, you know, where we should send the money and who needs it most. Gary, thank you for that opening. I'm gonna bring it down to the human level a little bit and
okay.
say, we need to care about climate because they're going to solve these things on the backs and at the expense of Black folks, Black communities, large immigrant communities, poor folks. They're going to solve it on our backs. Yes, everyone's being affected, but let's be real. The folks that got washed out of the Highlands in North Carolina, those are white people living on resort lake towns. They thought they were climate resilient. They learned a hard lesson after Helene and Milton that they're not. They're going to come for where we live. They've pushed us into the areas that they didn't want to live in, and they're going to come back. That's why gentrification is a cycle. The folks in Florida living on the coast in those million-dollar homes, those are white folks. They're being affected far greater than us, but they like to tell us that we're being affected greater.
Okay.
But when they lose multi-million-dollar houses, that's a big financial loss for them. And they're going to come for our area. They're going to come for places like Atlanta. We're in high, solid ground. Yeah, there's some floodplains around here. But as we saw with Helene, you know, she took a right and she wore them out. And they don't ever solve anything in this nation without us being expendable. Our communities are expendable. When America went through the Industrial Revolution and they needed to build railroads and factories, they put all the dirty, polluting industry in our communities. They raised our neighborhoods. They disenfranchised our real estate wealth to build the factories, to run the railroad tracks, to build the highways, to create greater mobility across the nation. So if Black folks, Black and Indigenous and people of color don't start paying attention to this climate change thing, we're going to be the expendable ones. They are going to solve this and create a climate resilient nation at our expense. So we better start paying attention.
You know, I'm glad you said that. And you mentioned gentrification. Is that why you see that happening like in like major cities like Atlanta, where they are relocating a lot out of certain counties like Fulton County, relocating, and then they are coming in, building, redesigning, even in the West End area, which is totally right next to the Atlanta University Center. Is that why we're seeing a lot of places being gentrified and our communities having to relocate and find other areas?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is exactly why. And let's go back and look at history. After emancipation of the enslaved African people, you know, they gave us all the coastal land, the land that they couldn't cultivate. They didn't know how to grow things in sand. So they pushed us out, you know, to the edges. Well, when they decided that we want to look at these beautiful ocean views, they came and they took all the land from us and they moved there. Now, so then we moved into the inner cities. So then we build up the inner cities. We make it livable. You know, we create businesses and infrastructure. And now they're being wiped away by climate change. That is why they're coming back. They're coming out from the coast. They're now about to start coming out of the mountains and the hills where they moved to, because now we know that a hurricane can hit the mountains. Mm-hmm. So when you see migratory patterns like gentrification, it's because wherever they escape to, now that they've, you know, sullied the land and all the commerce has come to where we are, they want to push us out and take it back over. And that's the case with every industry in the United States. Until we start understanding that people of color in the United States are seen as a means to the end of white people through policy, through structural racism, through messaging, through popular culture, we're going to keep falling for the same okey-doke. So we need to pay attention to these big themes out there, because they will solve this at our expense if we don't stay connected. And I'll give you one quick example really quickly. Is there is I'm working in league with the local college on a climate carbon pollution reduction solution called a direct air capture. Of course, they have a demonstration for that right here in the Southeast, right down in Alabama. They didn't go to the Midwest and the Badlands, you know, and do this demonstration. They didn't take it out and, you know, put them all in the high deserts of California. They came right to the South, where the highest concentration of African Americans are. This solution aims to deposit carbon captured out of the air into the ground. We don't know what it's going to do. We don't know how it'll affect everyone, but we theorize, what I've heard scientists theorize, is that it'll just form and turn into rock over time. That's what we believe it will do. But why they start here in the Southeast? Why not go to California? Why not go to the suburbs of New York? Why not go someplace where there are fewer Black folks? No, they came right here where there are Black folks. They're doing the demonstration. We've heard this story before. Experimentation. We know that, you know, they dropped infected mosquitoes in Carver Village in the Savannah area back in the 50s, saying we want to test them. But they really were dropping infected mosquitoes in those communities. So when you start seeing experimentation and demonstration projects come to where there are high concentrations of people of color, we know that a large amount of our non-federally recognized First Nations tribes are down in the Alabama area. We need to start paying attention to that. So we need to care about climate change so we make sure that we are not the scapegoats for the solutions.
Yeah, yeah. Very well said. Let's go to break. We'll be back with more. It's On Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes. Join the conversation, 404-726-1380. Why our communities must care about our climate. We'll go to break. We'll be back. Community must care about climate. Welcome back to our panel discussion. Dr. Jario Garcia, adjunct professor, School of City and Regional Planning, School of Public Policy, Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome to this conversation. We're glad to have you here. Thank you for being a part of this panel. Talk to us about, you know, even given the election results, why is it more important than ever that our communities must care about climate, and why must we continue to build a weather-ready nation for all people?
Yes, good morning, everybody. Can you hear me fine?
Yes, great.
Exactly. Thank you so much for the invitation. Thank you, Gary, for the invitation. Again, my name is Jairo Garcia. I am a professor of climate policies and sustainable urban development at Georgia Tech. I also teach classes online for Johns Hopkins University related to climate policies. So this has been a topic that I've been studying for several years and working with scientists and all kind of professionals in order to address what the scientific community is telling us that is the biggest threat of humankind. And the reason is because there is something in the top of us that we call the atmosphere. Without the atmosphere, the planet would be wouldn't have life on the planet. And the atmosphere is made by gases. It's a perfect chemistry that we is extremely sensitive to variance of the composition. It's like when we, for instance, we change our chemistry of our bodies or anything else, we know the consequences. It could be good, it could be bad, but in the case of the accumulation of gases that we are producing on the planet, we are basically treating ourselves to extinction, according to the scientific community. And the reason for that is because, again, with a sustainable atmosphere, with a perfect balance that the atmosphere produces, life will be possible on planet Earth. And they have been raising the alarm for decades. And unfortunately, we have this dark forces that are making trillions of dollars around the world, convincing people that burning fossil fuel is the way of civilization. denying that fossil fuel is just a tool like anybody else, and that we had developed better tools, and this is not new. If you look at records, you ended up finding out that the first car was electric about in the 1800s. And then for a long, long time, he's trying to convince us that we need fossil fuels because they were making money with that. So there are people convinced on that. When I was reading the report that you put in Fox News, that they are trading like, oh, they want us to stop using fossil fuels. The answer is yes. Yes, we want to stop with fossil fuels because we do not need fossil fuels. We don't need that. They're convincing you to that we need it, but we don't. It's like this is going back to the 1960s and 70s that cigarettes, that we need cigarettes. We don't. We don't. But people get in that false narrative that we need fossil fuels to survive when in fact it is not. It is not. I don't know what any person, especially low-income communities, are happy going to the gas stations to get money to those people that are destroying the planet and corrupting our democratic systems here and abroad. Why somebody wants to pay when you can? We don't have to do that. I charge my electric car for my kitchen, and it costs me $3, and I charge it every once or twice a week for $3. But then they're trying to convince us that electric cars are more expensive. They are not. Right now, China is making electric cars for less than $2,000. Electric cars for $2,000 that you don't have to go to the gas station. But they don't want you to do that because they want you to pay $30,000, $40,000 for a car that you don't need. And they want you to keep filling the pump every single week with $100. That's what they want you. And they're trying to convince you and our people that we need that. We don't. We don't. We have the technology. We have the technology to empower our communities. Instead of paying gasoline, what about we put food on our table? What about if we use that money to educate ourselves or go to the doctor? But they want us to keep paying fossil fuel. And that's what they're trying to tell us, like we are the radicals, which I don't mind to call me the radicals, but I see a better future. So the people, when they were using horses and they start to use cars, they might call radicals that they want to use cars, but that's how civilization move on. When we start to use computers, they call us radicals because we are using computers, but the civilization needs to move on. So those people that are embedded in the past, that they don't have the mentality to see the future, they can keep using the word radical if the radical for them means people that are progressive and wants to be see our communities progressing and don't see just those rich fat cows enriching more and more, destroying the planet, corrupting our democracy, and destroying our communities. Children are suffering with the diesel car that we are using for buses. For decades, we are putting diesel in school buses. Diesel, there are plenty of evidence, scientific papers that shows that diesel atrophy the cognitive development of children. And we are putting our children in buses run by diesel because they want to pay for diesel. When now we can have electric buses right here in Georgia, we are making electric buses. We are making here electric buses right there in Fort Valley. Bluebird, go there and look at it. Electric buses, not only they are better for our children, but also they are better for our taxes because instead of paying those fat cows that they are destroying the planet, we are saving money. We are saving money in our communities. We are saving our children, better health, better children for our future. So, and they're trying to tell us that we are the radicals, right? That we are really the bad people. The answer is yes, we want to eliminate fossil fuels because fossil fuels are destroying our planet, are destroying our communities. Look at all the money that is getting invested to elect Donald Trump. It's coming from fossil fuel and people that just want to destroy the planet. So
well, yeah,
going
even
back,
with this recent, but Dr. Garcia, even with this recent announcement of the gentleman he wants to put over the EPA, he wants to use fossil fuels.
Absolutely. And the EPA has been, the EPA, I want to tell you, take you back to 1960s. The EPA was because in the 1960s, the American people cared about America. In the 1960s, people, they went to the streets. 20 million Americans on April 22nd, 1970, they went to the streets demanding clean water and clean air. 20 million Americans, those radicals went to the streets and demanding clean water and clean air. And because of them, because those brave Americans, right now we can breathe clean, we can breathe clean air and we can drink clean water. And they, we created the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. That is the work of American people, the decent American people that want to see this planet a better place. And now they want to destroy it. They want to destroy something that we did. And we're supposed to be the radicals. We're supposed to be the radicals. So now in the future, what we see is just very bloom without EPA, without somebody to watch corporations destroying, dumping pollutants in the rivers, killing fishes, poisoning our children. And then we are the bad people, right? We are the bad people, right? So when they put those announcements, they are basically talking about themselves. They are the radicals. They are the ones that don't want to, they don't want a future for us. And they misinform the people, telling us that the EPA is bad, that it's bad for business, but totally the contrary, totally the opposite. When we have better clean air and clean water, people can work. If you are sick, how are you gonna work? We need clean air and clean water in order for people to produce economic development. But we cannot have clean air and clean water when these pollutants are poison our air and poison our water.
Yeah, absolutely.
We cannot
right.
have that. And the EPA working for that for almost 50 years, and they want to destroy that. And we're going to see in front of our eyes destroy that.
Yeah.
And then when the EPA destroy and our water is dirty and our clean is in our air is dirty, and our children are suffering, and we cannot go to work because we are sick, and our skies are full of pollutants, then tell me why we shouldn't care about that.
I hear you.
Tell me why we shouldn't care about that.
Yeah. Let's go to break, and we'll come back with more on this discussion. We'll be back with more News and Talk 13.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Quality sleep isn't just about how long, but how well you sleep. And science proves temperature plays a massive role. ChiliPad by SleepMe is a precision temperature-controlled sleep system that cools or warms your bed so you can sleep hard and recover harder. And it's not just for pro athletes. Just set your temp from 55 to 115 degrees, and ChiliPad does the rest. Visit sleep.me and use code SLEEPCOOL20 for 20% off your first ChiliPad. That's SLEEP.me for 20% off your ChiliPad. This special offer expires September 30th and cannot be combined with other offers.
1980 WAOK. Why our communities must care about climate. Welcome back to On Point with Wandalyn Stokes. We've heard from some of our panelists. Jay Bassett, talk to us about the work that you do and your thoughts around climate change and what our communities must do.
Yeah, well, I'd be happy to do that. And if you recall, I was on probably about a year ago.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a similar conversation, but maybe looking toward the future about the role of communities and community organizations going forward on this discussion around climate. Because I think that's, as we look, it's around small d democracy, about how we as communities and how we as community and community organizations work better together to keep moving the agenda forward on climate that also help us live better, right?
Right.
And so that's what I wanted to touch on, is to maybe give a little bit looking forward of the power of communities and our work within local governments to really reshape and continue to advance forward. And one of the examples, as we look across the breadth of, organizations, and in this case, for today, I'm representing the Lifecycle Building Center, which is one of those community-centered organizations. And what Lifecycle Building Center does is it's this intersection of materials. And as we know in Georgia, there's deep social construct to how we've extracted and used materials in the past, anywhere from the weeping times in Darien, Georgia, of timber that went overseas to, as we know, on the West End, the brickyard and the quarry that extracted materials to rebuild the city of Atlanta after Reconstruction. And part of what Lifecycle Building Center is doing is taking, we have values in those materials, but how do we use those materials as part of doing climate and improving climate within where people live and build wealth models around that? So, for example, it's around taking materials that would otherwise go into landfill and cause impacts to and environmental injustice impacts within landfills. But let's say if we can gather those materials and reinvest them into housing where we're doing weatherization and legacy housing that lead to and are part of some of the IRA investments going into putting in and reducing energy burdens, reducing mold and mildew because we're restructuring houses to be watertight. And at the same time, we're building new jobs and new positions in both deconstruction and construction around climate. And those are investments that are being made today, right, in our communities. And, if we look at Lifecycle Building Center, the materials they're providing are going out to over 300 other community organizations in the West End that they're reinvesting in their mission back in communities. And each one of those materials that we reclaim and put back in the local economy, that's what we're doing, is materials that aren't going to waste that we're paying to waste and causing impacts, but are also providing job and economic opportunities that help us build more resiliency and climate in the communities we live in. And so for me, kind of this journey I've been on, from my time in the public sector is to say, how do we focus and bring community organizations together to build their own ownership and economic systems that support and advance, as Dr. Yarrow pointed out on, or Garcia Pardo pointed out on, advancing climate and how we live better together in the communities we're already in. How do we improve health in a real structural way? Mm-hmm. And then how do we do workforce development and the job skills of training for the future through things like the Breaking Barriers program at LBC, where we actually were training people on deconstruction and construction to be able to do energy efficiency improvement and legacy housing within the Grove Park and West End area, and make that as an opportunity for investment and entrepreneurship as we go forward. And as I'm looking at these are not things that are going to stop. We can continue to do these things and build stronger communities around climate that include things like better affordable housing, better performing housing, reducing the amount of energy costs and energy burdens that people spend. And, you know, it was Gary Harris that really helped us on that, and being able to really bring folks from the community in to train them on deconstruction and weatherization and so forth that are still underway today and will continue over the next 4 years within those investments. And how do we continue to build capacity and strength through the community organizations that are already in place doing wonderful things, but help bring them together, better together, to help build stronger communities as one way to advance this conversation on climate, as even if there are some questions from the national perspective, right, about where we're going to go, we can continue to do these things. We're already invested in them. We're already building wealth, and wealth that goes into building healthy communities. And there is still funding from the Inflation Reduction Act that is still out there for communities to take advantage of, even as we go forward. And let's maximize the leverage of that to advance where we got to go. And, I just want to point out one other organization, because I just really love what they're doing around this idea of materials supporting climate. So we're bringing circularity of ownership of materials, community ownership, into addressing climate at where we live in people's homes, as well as in our communities around nature-based learning and other things.
Yeah.
But there's another organization called the Community Health Aligning Revitalization, Resiliency, and Sustainability. It's called CHARS. Gwen Smith is the executive director of that. And she's going around working with communities to put in repair cafes, where she brings people that are, bring that knowledge within communities to repair things for folks as part of this new economic construct, so that we're doing climate by actually repairing and reusing machinery and things we already do, and in a way that's also generating some economic opportunities within community-based organizations. And, Gwen was a graduate of the Environmental Justice Academy that EPA Region 4, the Environmental Protection Agency Region 4 did. And so she's using her knowledge of bringing and organizing to be able to bring these repair cafes into community as a way of supporting folks to get their machinery, sewing machines, clothing fixed, so that they can live well without necessarily having to go re-extract again, right? So this is the kind of thinking that I'm seeing, and we're seeing it alive and well in the West End. And there's hundreds of community-based organizations already doing this work. We just got to activate it and keep it going.
Yeah, definitely we do. Let's go to Omari. He's a call on the line. Thanks for holding, Omari. Go right ahead with your question.
Greetings, Sister Wanda, and your distinguished guest. Sister Wanda, I didn't catch the name of the lady who was talking earlier about gentrification, but...
Alicia Scott?
I'm sorry?
Alicia Scott, Ms. Scott, go ahead ask your question.
Yeah, well, one thing I was going to mention to her is that gentrification reminds me of the Trail of Tears. But my question is probably for Dr. Garcia. Dr. Garcia, isn't there a new term for this recent extinction caused by humans? Have you heard of it? I think it's... Holocene or Anthropocene.
Let's see, Dr. Garcia, your thoughts?
Yes, Anthropocene means that it's made by humans. Anthropogenic. Anthropogenic gases are gases produced by humans. Yes, Anthropocene is an age in which basically we're changing the planet in a way that it meets our needs without any consideration for the rest of beings in the planet. It's called an anthropogenic age.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Omari. We'll go to break. We'll be back with our callers. Also, Dr. Brown is coming up next as well. We'll go to break. We'll be back. Well, it's On Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes, why our communities must care about climate. Dr. Rajni is sharing with us today. She's founder and executive director of the Institute for Catalyzing Equity, Justice, and Social Change, professor at Stetson University, and also past president and current racial equity and education chair of the National Coalition for the Homeless. Welcome, Dr. Rajni. Talk to us about, you know, your thoughts around. And it's been 1 week since the election. You know, how do you and others in your environmental ecosystem coping with a potential loss of momentum and gains? You know, what's the mood like among your colleagues and peer groups?
Absolutely. Thank you, Wandalyn. Thank you, Gary, for having me today. You know, there is definitely trauma. It is devastating to think about the incoming administration already discussing horrific policies, massive cuts to needed investments that are so needed to advance environmental justice. In addition, we already had, you know, have lived through the awful impacts the last time. And in fact, you know, the current administration, you know, has worked to try to undo and make some things better, where now some of those potentially could be reversed. And so there is a lot here. And what we know is low income and historically and socially marginalized communities, Indigenous Black and Brown people, bear disproportionate burdens of environmental harms. And the higher rates of death are very real. You just have to look at the past year, mm-hmm. and you can see the impacts of climate change. And again, you know, everybody is impacted, but disproportionate overrepresentation among, you know, some of our most vulnerable and historically marginalized communities. In fact, recent hurricanes such as Helene and Milton, I'll just share, you know, my own family's residence is still in disarray from the storm. I live here in Central Florida. We have to protect our ecosystems and biodiversity and prevent and address environmental harms. I think this is a time, especially as we think about the new administration coming in, where we are all called collectively to start to organize, mobilize, and make sure that we are working actively to create a more just society where all people have equal access to safe living conditions. And this is going to be, you know, something that requires us to care with both urgency and mindfulness. And so, you know, while there is a lot of, you know, apathy, people are feeling overwhelmed right now. There's so much going on in the world. You know, this is also the time we have got to rise. We have got to get together, educate in our communities, agitate, get into good trouble, as one of my mentors, Congressman John Lewis, would always put it. So we have a lot of work to do. We also are seeing that this is also a public health issue. So climate change exacerbates environmental health risks. And we see this from infectious disease to heat-related illnesses, as Gary brought up at the beginning of our show today, to respiratory conditions. And, you know, the thing here that I think is so important for us to realize is our most vulnerable communities and brothers and sisters and fellow human beings are suffering at extremely high and unacceptable rates. Children and youth, older adults or elders, people with pre-existing health conditions. And so there is a lot, and we are called on to start to think mindfully and actively work to build a climate resilient infrastructure, especially in our most vulnerable areas, and making sure that we are prioritizing racial equity and intersectional equity in all of the work. I also just want to share, you know, as an educator, right, you know, the question of why should we care? Mm-hmm. Well, if we care about our children and our youth, we need to show up. We are seeing how natural disasters are impacting our children.
Yeah.
Even thinking about disrupting children's education, delaying academic progress, and especially children in poverty. You know, it exasperates existing educational inequities, and families in poverty are hit the hardest, with also limited resources to access and to rebuild. Displacement is very real. We are seeing that all over now,
yeah,
where children and youth are losing homes. Schools and communities are suffering. There is emotional and psychological trauma that is very real. And some of these have very lasting effects: anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, among our children, right? And so this calls on all of us. And I think it also, as we talk about environmental justice, making sure that education, prevention, and recovery is part of our discussion as we think about addressing climate and building a more loving, healthy, just world for everyone.
That's great. You know, Dr. Rajani, how can we protect our ecosystems? You mentioned it earlier. How can we do it? What should communities do, individuals do?
I love that. What a great question. And so I think that, you know, we have to start to think on both macro or large levels, from policies and systems and structures showing up and voting, even in our local elections now, right? As we continue to kind of think about policies that are needed. And also, again, thinking about the very terrifying reality of what is to come. This is not the time for us to kind of sit down and bury our heads in the sand, but to come together and to start to say, you know, we need to take action. Now, of course, you know, there are many ways to get involved, even at the micro level. So you think about day-to-day actions have huge impact. We need to all be voices in our community, show up at our town halls, make sure that environmental justice, racial and intersectional equity are being centered and prioritized as we make decisions. We also need to make sure that there is diverse representation at all of our tables, because when we are not at the table, we're often on the menu. And so we've got a lot of work to do.
I hear you.
Absolutely. And on individual levels as well, what I would say is continue to educate ourselves and to educate others, right? And even start in your own home to take actions. Think about ways to conserve water. Think about ways that we can reduce our use of plastic. Even little ways can have huge impact, and we need it all from macro to micro.
That's good. That's good. Closing thoughts, Alicia Scott. Any closing words and thoughts?
Thank you, Wanzelin. Yes, I think the bottom line here is, and the main message is that communities of color, Black, Indigenous communities of color, we need to start paying attention to this climate conversation. It tends to be heavily populated with academicians, those of us who sort of work in these high-end level jobs. And we sort of talk to ourselves. We're really in an echo chamber when we think about it, and we've been talking about that a lot lately. But community needs to start paying attention to all of this, because as Dr. Brown said, if we are not at the table, yeah, we are on the menus. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, you know, they solve things at our expense. People of color are expendable when it comes to solving for big ideas and big problems in this nation. And we need to shift that tide by being fully engaged, in their face, and concerned about this. This is one of the biggest conversations, especially as COP29 is happening right now.
Yeah.
The world is focusing on climate, and our communities, our vulnerable communities, our historically marginalized communities need to wake up and start paying attention to it before we become the expense that solves this problem for the world.
That's great. Thank you so much. Jay Bassett, closing thought? Dr. Garcia, any closing thoughts? We'll go to break. We'll be back with more as this discussion continues. And callers, I've got you coming up next, 404-726-1380. A lot of information being shared today as to why we must care about climate and our community.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Quality sleep isn't just about how long, but how well you sleep. And science proves temperature plays a massive role. ChiliPad by SleepMe is a precision temperature-controlled sleep system that cools or warms your bed so you can sleep hard and recover harder. And it's not just for pro athletes. Just set your temp from 55 to 115 degrees, and ChiliPad does the rest. Visit sleep.me and use code SLEEPCOOL20 for 20% off your first ChiliPad. That's SLEEP.me for 20% off your ChiliPad. This special offer expires September 30th and cannot be combined with other offers.
We'll be back with more News at 1380 WAOK. Live well, win well. It's On Point with Wandalyn Stokes. News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Welcome back to part two of Why Our Community Must Care About Climate. And this discussion is so very important when we talk about it. Gary Harris, I wanted to just ask you about what are some of the things that communities can do to protect our climate, to protect our environment. What are some of the things that we can do, some practices that we should put in place?
Yeah, absolutely, Wanda. Again, thanks so much for having us. It's a great conversation with the first half. Now it's going to get even better with the second half here. But again, why should our communities care about climate and what can they do? Well, inherently, there are already some protective features, like regulation. That limits emissions and tracks different chemicals and requires reporting. But when you have an incoming administration that wants to roll back that regulation and such, that will cause more harm and such. So also communities, rely on local governments and state governments, to have resources in terms of funding to help grow stronger, thriving communities and protect them in terms of emergency preparedness, et cetera. But when an incoming administration is going to roll back funding, that's going to limit those sorts of resources, that makes communities vulnerable and such. And also what makes communities more resilient, is education and building awareness, and that comes with frontline communities and community-based organizations, really taking on communities and making them more resilient, through outreach and through active engagement and such. And the Biden-Harris administration saw that those frontline communities needed that attention and provided the resources and provided the funding. But now the other administration is coming in and taking away those resources and such. And therefore, those communities are going to be right back where they were, being vulnerable to emissions coming from heavy industries and such, being vulnerable to extreme heat, being vulnerable to hurricanes and tornadoes and such, and not being as resilient as they could, because we're rolling back regulation, we're rolling back funding, and we're rolling back resources, making those communities more vulnerable than ever. So what can they do? They need to come together and build coalitions amongst themselves, you know, and do what they can, you know, with the resources they have. They need to pound on local governments. They need to call on philanthropy as well, you know, to help them to make those communities in everything from housing through the design of the community itself to be more resilient. And then finally, you know, they need to be active in processes, you know, from local government to state government to federal government. It's going to be their voices, you know, which are going to bring change. So not only should showing up and voting, but now in a sustained fashion. That's how and why communities can make themselves more resilient. That's why this is so important.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Todd, welcome to the conversation. Go right ahead with your question.
Hey, Wanderlyn and Gary, is it just you on the air right now, Gary?
Well, we've got other guests coming up as well, but go ahead with your question. Yes.
Because the reason I had a question for the other people, I didn't know if they had just left. I live in Lake Michigan and Lake Erie, two big freshwater lakes, did not have a healthy deep freeze last year, and that's the seventh consecutive year for each of them, and that's due because of global warming. Okay, I question to you, Gary, is this something that we could actually really reverse, or can we only at best slow it down, and at what cost? And I have one other question, that's to you too, Gary. I know that air conditioning is a really big thing, and we need it for people, especially in the southeast, for school kids and people that have to work in these buildings. But air conditioning adds to global warming as well. What can we really be done about the two things that I just posed to you?
You know, Todd, you know, it's really, you know, it's all about limiting emissions, okay? It's all about limiting the amount of greenhouse gases going up into our atmosphere and such, and that comes in several ways. You know, we know that the majority of our emissions come from transportation, so therefore we need to find ways to limit what's coming out of our tailpipe, such that it's not going to have that climate changing effect. You know, and that could be switching to EVs. That could be switching to more efficient vehicles. That means switching out our fleets in terms of school buses. That means transforming our transport, long range transportation, from diesel to some sort of economically more efficient fuel burning engines to electrification as well. So again, and also rules and processes associated with transportation as well. Making that entire transportation ecosystem, from transporting individuals through transporting goods to actual ships and port operations as well. You know, the more that we eliminate emissions, the more we limit the harmful effects of climate change. So we need to start there. Secondly, you know, the second most highest cause of emissions is power plants. So we need to switch from coal burning and fossil fuels, you know, natural gas, you know, to solar and wind and geothermal. And I hate to use the term nuclear, but perhaps even some of that sprinkled in as well. Again, it's all about reeling in these emissions and therefore preventing climate change. And in terms of HVACs,
isn't nuclear power, well, I know it is, actually. Nuclear power plants are working quite well over in France and England, isn't that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely. And go ahead with your question.
Now you can go ahead, Gary.
I was just putting it out there. You said you hated to say nuclear, but nuclear power plants are working quite well over in France and England. quite well. But go ahead, I'm listening.
Yeah. In terms of nuclear, that isn't an option. Matter of fact, on Tuesday, look what the Monday? Look what the Biden administration did. They said that they're gonna use nuclear, add some 200 gigawatts. That's a lot of power. Using nuclear to meet the 2050 emissions goals and such. They're gonna start to I think it's 50 gigawatts per year, and then 2035 they're going to ramp that up, etc. But again, there was recent initiatives with small modular reactors, and then on Monday they talked about even using some large reactors again to meet these emissions goal. And nuclear has some challenges, and we know that in terms of Plant Vogtle in Georgia. You know, $17 billion over budget, 7 years off schedule. You know, that's not a good project. You know, but I'm sure there's some lessons learned from there as well. But nuclear can be a component of this if done right.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot. We'll go to break. We'll be back with Reverend Michael Malcolm, Daniel Blackman, Davida Resto, and more right here on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. It's On Point with Wandalyn Stokes. I want to welcome the Reverend Michael Malcolm, who's Executive Director of Alabama Interfaith Power and Light and a licensed and ordained United Church Christ minister. Also, he's a former senior pastor of the Rush Memorial Congregational UCC Church in Atlanta and founder of the People's Justice Council, which is a 501c3 nonprofit focusing on environmental justice. Reverend Malcolm, welcome to On Point. How are you today?
Thank you, Wanderlyn. I'm great. Thank you all for the opportunity for me being here. Thank you to Brother Gary, as well as yourself. It's good to be home.
Yeah, it's good to have you home. What are we doing? You know, what's the faith community's approach to, you know, being faithful stewards of creation and responding to climate change, you know, through environmental justice and energy conservation and all of that you work with? Tell us about the work that you do and how do you see things playing out in the future?
Yeah, so Let me first say I've got a cold, y'all. So if I'm struggling through this, please forgive me. But when it comes down to our work, I'll answer both questions in one. So when it comes down to our work, we are in the process of doing the same things that we have been doing, even in the outcomes of this election, because our fight is our fight. When we look at the fact that there are people who have to make decisions on whether they will eat a healthy meal or they'll pay their light bill. Our fight is still our fight.
Yeah.
When it comes down to the Gulf South and the storms that we face that have gotten more frequent and have gotten even stronger and have gone even further, we still face what we face. And so our fight is our fight, whether it was that administration or this administration, the fight is still the fight. Fossil fuel is still expanding and fossil fuel leasing is still happening. And so our fight remains the same. And what we are doing is strengthening those for that fight. And these are happening in communities. We just had a brother previously who talked about nuclear and advocacy toward nuclear, if you will. Maybe he wasn't, but it sounded as if though. And what my question was, but what about the waste? What happens with the waste and how are our communities suffering from the waste when you have nuclear communities that are around nuclear facilities whose life expectancy is no greater than getting over 40. Mm-hmm. You've got a real serious issue there that we're ignoring for the sake of being able to boost our economic interest and our value. That's problematic when it comes down to us of faith. And it should be problematic when it comes down to us of faith because we're those who advocate for compassion and care. So not only are we strengthening those who are already in the fold, but we're calling for those who operate outside the fold to either come back in or identify themselves as who they are. We can't identify with Christian nationalists who would put their economic interests mm-hmm. over community interests and over the cosmos, the interests of the cosmos.
Right.
When we are told to be good stewards, we are taught to be good stewards, and we're supposed to advocate for being good stewards of both the cosmos as well as community.
What tactics and strategies should, like, grassroots, you know, community-based organizations take on to sustain the gains of the past 4 years?
Well, I think that's for me, Rev, a rather loaded question, because we've had some gains. But if I look in the Gulf South, I would say that our losses have been greater than our gains. So, again, the tactics that our communities, especially communities of faith, those who are already doing this type of work and are already fighting, such as Green the Church, such as Rise St. James, Hip Hop Caucus, those who are already fighting this fight, continue to fight the fight, be strengthened in this fight. But those who are not in this fight, get in the fight. And those communities of faith, help support those who are already in this fight. Support them in your time, support them in your talent, and support them in your treasure. We need to be resourced, especially now when you have an administration that has already signaled that they will be coming after nonprofits who are doing this type of work and advocating for the health of their communities. You have us under attack and our resources are being dried up, basically. It's time for those communities of faith to take lead and start pumping resources into these community-based organizations who are out here doing this work and doing the ministry of getting out and compelling men and women to come in. Check.
But when you think about, like, the area that you work in Alabama, what are some of the things that you all have been challenged with and also areas where you've had some gains?
Yeah, so I'll look at Alabama, but then I want to go out to the greater Gulf to talk about some of the gains. So looking at Alabama, some of the challenges that we've been faced with is we've had industries that have come in and polluted our lands, polluted our air, polluted our water quality. We have one of the largest electricity suppliers in the South through Southern Power Company, who's still taking advantage of our communities. Whether they're backing bad policies that harm our communities, or they're jacking up interest rates without even hearing and telling us how and why, just to expense or passing off rather the expenses from new manufacturing that's unnecessary. So we've these fights are continuing on. They hadn't stopped for us, and we're continuing to do those. I'm sorry, I can't remember the second part of that question.
Oh, just about, you know, even gains or losses there in the Alabama area.
Sorry. So looking at the greater Gulf South, the gains. I want to not just look at Alabama, but I want to look at the greater Gulf to really look at some of the gains. I don't want to necessarily call out the policy gains, because again, I feel as if though we've lost more than we've actually gained in that arena. However, I will say the way that communities have rose up to meet these moments, that's where you really look at your victories. It's more locally based. It's more community based. Okay. When you have communities who have instituted in these food apartheids, when you have communities of faith such as Green the Church, Louisiana, who have instituted programs to help bring a network of people or communities of faith and others into a network of growing their own food, using their lands to grow their own food so that they can be able to feed their communities. Whether you have people like People's Justice Council and Alabama Interfaith Power and like, introducing We Rise, which is weatherizing every residence in the Southeast, that are teaching people how to weatherize their homes and weatherize their buildings to, excuse me, lower the contaminants that come in the house while also lowering their power bills so that they can increase their income. You have programs such as From Resilience to Restoration that are teaching people how to deal with these disaster, unnatural weather-related disasters and how to survive them, and not just survive, but thrive after the disaster is over with, through mutual aid, through disaster readiness, but in practical ways, local level ways. That's where you really get your gains and really get your inspiration. What's shameful is we still at this point hadn't really taken that community look, because those in the community are always in the community, and you know how it is when you see something all the time, you tend to take advantage of it and just expect for it to be there. But the immoral issue that I have there, Rev, is that it is not right that we struggle to do right.
Something's wrong with that. Yeah,
something's wrong with that.
It certainly is.
When you have those in communities of faith who advocate for doing what's right.
Right.
But look at us with eyes wide shut when it comes down to the work that we're actually doing.
That's so true. Let's go to break. We'll be back with more News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Live Well, Win Well. It's On Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes and News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Let's see our callers. James from Atlanta. Go right ahead. Our panelists are on the line. Go right ahead with your question.
Yes, one, I'd like to comment on this climate change issue. I was really waiting for after the election to get into this, but I'm glad to have this conversation today. I'm in favor 100% of moving in the direction of free energy, and I believe we will continue to move in that direction on this planet, regardless of which administration is in position for whichever country. But I think what is not, we also need to discuss along with global warming, is also global cooling. Because over the decades, dating back to the 20s or 30s, there's always been a group of scientists on that researching global cooling, and that the climate goes through cycles. And this somewhat will answer the question that Tara was asking regarding the reversing of this climate, of the climate. And I think we have to consider global cooling, because I believe we have now moved into global cooling. And in addition to doing all the preparations which we've done for global warming, we also have to prepare for global cooling, because when you're facing temperatures of 20, 30, 40, 50, 80 below zero, you may not be able to leave your home for a month or so. I think we have to also prepare for that. I just want to,
Let's see our panelists. Any response to that, our panelists?
I would have to throw that to perhaps Gary.
Gary, what do you think?
Any drastic swing in weather is bad. Any long-term, prolonged change in climate is bad. We need to understand the causes of it. We need to mitigate it. We need to provide the resources and funding. We need to put the protective laws and barriers and policies in place. And we need to sustain all of those measures and such. Climate change, whether it's moving in the negative direction or a positive direction, is bad. We need something which is predictable. We need something that we can really put our arms and hands around and such, and be able to move with it and contain it in a plausible manner. And again, that means having the right leadership in place. And the Trump administration has been bringing in an EPA director, that has little or no regard for the regulatory policies in place. The last time Trump was in place, he canceled nearly 100 regulations. And again, those regulations are the protective barriers which keeps climate change in check. You know, and again, the funding and such is being rolled back and such. A recent article on Fox News talked about the billions of dollars being given to grassroots, you know, and frontline organizations to mitigate climate and such, and move to a clean energy economy and such. And even that's being under attack as well. So again, we need stability in our climate, but then we need even more stability in our in our regulatory framework and in our administration in terms of acting on goals like the Paris Agreement, acting on goals like the 2050 emissions goals, etc.
Hey, if I can add in something direct to the gentleman's question,
okay,
I would push back, right? Because there's this myth that, you know, started really around the 70s when there was a scientific delegation that came together to talk about how the Earth was cooling and, you know, and then there was like this imminent ice age. And there's a lot that goes on. And Gary said it best, like when we talk about the science, we have accelerated the warming of the planet. And look, it's a fact, right? When you look at, if you just take NASA images of glaciers around the world, we've seen an acceleration in sea level rise and glaciers melting, including some of the largest glaciers in the world that are now releasing methane into the atmosphere. Like, these are very critical things that are happening. So yes, the Earth does have a natural space that it goes through, but I'll say it to you like this. When it that's the equivalent of saying that the Earth has a natural progression, but summer happens in winter and winter happens in summer, right? Mm-hmm. Like when the climate is confused based on atmospheric challenges and you're seeing a rise in extreme weather, we're seeing hurricanes at levels now because historically we haven't seen this in cities like Arizona, where they had 113 consecutive days of 100 degree plus weather. That is not normal. 100 degree days are normal, right? Cooling and heating are normal. What's not normal is the amount and the rate at which this is happening, accelerated, but also at a rate where we do not have scientific data that shows this over a consistent period of time.
I say. Daniel Blackman, join us, former EPA 4 region administrator, statesman, and founder of Renaissance 94. What are your thoughts on this topic as well?
Well, look, Gary said it best. When you have a guy like Lee Zeldin, who's coming in to run the EPA, that not only, you know, opposed the president, you know, and let me just, for full transparency for your listeners, I worked with the Biden administration. I was appointed by President Biden. I worked during the Obama administration on the Clean Power Plan. But I've also worked with organizations like Rational Middle around the country that looks at bipartisan efforts with Republicans and Democrats to ensure that we protect the climate. Gary mentioned nuclear plant Vogtle earlier. When the Tea Party was established, we disagreed on 99.9%, bar over the nine of the issues. But on climate and on utility bills going up, as Brother Malcolm said earlier, we oppose this with Republicans as well. So I want people to know I'm not coming from a point of being a hyper progressive or Democrat. I'm coming from a point of common sense. And when you have someone like Lee Zeldin, who's coming in, that has gone on record to say that he wants to lower regulations on corporations, well, tell that to people in Rockdale County that's dealing with BioLab, because BioLab has had three major infractions over a 7-year period, four in the last 20 years. And these companies, we do not have bad actor legislation in states where the predominant populations of Black and brown people are protected. So when you deregulate, number one, you are basically saying to companies that are making tens of millions, if not billions of dollars, that we're going to fine you a couple hundred thousand. We're going to fine you $1 million or $2 million. And that is a problem. Right? $1 million to someone like Elon Musk, he makes that in a couple of seconds. So we need to be more adamant about putting people in place and enforce it. Did the Biden administration get everything right? Hell no. No administration did. But what I will tell you is that the most historic investment in climate, in infrastructure, in water, and I'll tell you this, if you want to see the reach of it, The majority of the states that I led as EPA regional administrator were conservative-led states. So I'm not talking about this from an Atlanta-centric perspective. I'm saying states like Kentucky and Florida and Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi. These are states that were regulated while I was at EPA. We dealt with Jackson, Mississippi, Lowndes County, Alabama, the west side of Atlanta, Vine City and English Avenue, which is built on their soil is massively contaminated with lead. So I say all that to say this, three things we have to be concerned about the incoming Trump administration is one, they're not going to tighten legislation that impacts pollution from power plants and emissions. What does this mean for us? During COVID, black and brown people and poor people had gotten COVID 6, 7, and 8 times the national average at an accelerated rate. Most of us ended up in the hospital. And then most of us on top of that ended up dead, right? That came from pre-existing conditions from the petrochemical industry, from pollution, from areas around the United States that had always been polluting us. And we've inherited bad lungs, right? We didn't inherit good real estate. And lastly, I think that the rates at which this is happening, which I mentioned about bad actor legislation, the Trump administration, from lead requirements to investment in energy structures to a just transition, which means going to zero emissions by a certain date. Most people have 2050. Other places have 2030, but we are now going to go backwards from a progress standpoint, which means lower life expectancy, increased amounts of challenges with black women and infant mortality because they've already found over 180 chemicals in women's cord blood. We have to address this from an environmental urgent crisis standpoint, or we're going to fall further back in 3 years than we have in the past 50.
Well stated. Let's go to break. We'll be back with more News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Live well, win well. It's On Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes and News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Davina Resto, welcome to this conversation. Tell us about the work that you do and what you'd like to see change and happen.
Thank you so much for having me, Wendolyn and Gary, for the invite. I'm really happy to be here. And I've been loving listening to all of the panelists you've had so far. So this has been great. But so I'm with the Environmental Protection Network. We are a national 501c3 nonprofit that works across the country, really working with frontline groups to help them navigate the different resources that are out there and available for them to access to uplift their environmental justice projects or public health projects. And so a lot of the work that we've been doing recently is helping a lot of these communities, a lot of these community-based organizations access this Inflation Reduction Act, this historic funding that has come out of the Biden administration for environmental justice for communities. And we've been really tackling how to get it to those groups that it's intended to get to and how to eliminate some of those barriers that have long been just, you know, stopping groups. They've been literally barriers to groups getting access to a lot of this federal funding. With this new administration, we're really just sitting tight and anticipating and waiting and see what happens with this funding, what happens with this money. Like I said, we've been really ramping up our work and helping groups access it. So we're cautious, but we're still here. I think Reverend Malcolm said it also very well. We're still in this fight, and we know that this is a fight that we've been in both administrations and trying to get these resources to communities and this funding to communities. And we're just going to continue to be here to continue to support groups and access as much of it as will be available.
That's great. That's great. Because is that part of what you're going to do over the next 4 years, even to continue to work at this, to sustain the gains and make climate goals a reality?
Yeah. And so the work at EPN, I think, has really always shifts with the new administration that's in play and the opportunities are out there. But like I said, this has been a historic amount of funding that has just got into frontline communities. And we're now just seeing how it's positively impacting communities and creating really sustainable change. And so, yes, our goal is to ensure that this funding can stay around as long as possible. Our goal is to ensure that there are many things in place, that communities are starting to use this money, have are gotten to agreement with EPA and other federal agencies that they've got this money sitting in their account. We want to make this money stick around as long as possible, because like I just said, we're finally starting to see the positive impacts that things like Justice 40 and the IRA are having on these frontline communities who have been, you know, just so bearing the brunt of climate justice and environmental injustice for years and years and years. And it's been so exciting for groups like mine and for frontline groups to see that this funding is starting to make a substantial impact. And it's also very scary that it might be taken away within the next administration. So we're pushing, you know, right now to get as much of that money allocated as much as possible. But we will be here to fight for communities and ensure that they can continue to access all of the resources that are available for them in their projects.
That's good. That's good. Sharon, welcome to the conversation. Go right ahead.
Well, thank you for having this forum. Thank you for all the panelists. Daniel Blackman, I just called to let you know how much you appreciate it for the level of knowledge that you have and the caring that you show for our communities. And that is exactly why I voted for you and campaigned for you when you were running along with Warnoff and Ossoff. Just keep up the good work, and anything that I can do, I'll listen at the end of the show for any contact and access information that I can use.
Yes,
and,
ma'am. Thank you so much.
What long-term effect do you guys think that all of the things that Elon Musk is shooting up in the Earth's atmosphere will have on this planet? Thank you.
I mean, I'll start with that. I think one thing that we haven't done a good enough job with is understanding all of what Mr. Musk and his technology has the capability for. I think the more poignant question I would ask is, what does this new role that Trump is giving him do? Not only what I think is a conflict of interest, you know, he is already federally funded by the Department of Energy. In fact, Elon Musk would not have been able to create Tesla without an initial investment from the Department of Energy at $500 million. They did pay back, but I think when you look at the SpaceX program and what he has done with Starlink, there has not been enough attention around space waste. We don't even talk about that. The sister brings up a good point, because there is an immense amount of waste that is floating around the Earth's atmosphere. Much of that waste comes down. It goes into the ocean. The ocean is massively polluted. And I think that we need to start thinking from a regulatory standpoint that there is no planet B, right? I mean, we live on Earth. And until technology gets us to a point where we can not only look at other options, which is not going to happen in my lifetime, we need to be very adamant about, number one, making sure that the relationship between Mr. Musk and the Trump administration falls under an ethical purview, because we don't want to see a conflict of interest. But then secondly, I think we need to make sure that we're regulating waste overall, especially as it comes down into our atmosphere and into our oceans and our waters, which are already, again, heavily polluted. And lastly, I think one of the things that we can do to safeguard it is do your research, right? Look up Starlink, look up SpaceX and all the program that he's doing. Look at what's happening with cobalt in the Congo. You know, we're seeing the death of thousands of Congolese brothers and sisters, while we talk about the Israeli and Palestinian conflict, which is very important. We talk about Russia and Ukraine. We rarely talk about conflict in Africa, where the batteries that are used to power Teslas, the cobalt comes from mines in Africa. And we need to make sure we're aware of that.
That's great. That's great. Thank you all for being a part of our show and this conversation today, and to our listeners as well. Reverend Michael Malcolm, closing thought. How can people follow you and connect with you? Daniel Blackman, How can people stay connected or even closing thoughts?
Yeah, I'll just give the connection because I want to respect everyone's time. You can contact my office, Rosa at R94. That's R-O-S-A at R for Renaissance and the number 9 and the number 4.org. Rosa at R94.org. That goes directly to me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Davina Resto, how can people stay connected to you and the work that you do as well?
Yeah, I'll just say that they can head over to the environmentalprotectionnetwork.org where they can find out more about our, there's folks like me, one for every region, to work with the communities that we work with closer. But I just want to say that this recent election really underscores that our communities just can no longer afford to ignore the impacts of climate change. And we're going to be here and ready to fight for them. And though there's a mixture of concern, there's also a level of committedness from our communities and determination to continue to advocate for our communities and pushing for environmental justice. So we're here to support y'all and we will continue no matter who's in the administration. So
thank you so very much. Gary Harris, thank you for the invite for all of our guests today. As we close out, where is the hope? Where's the hope, Gary?
You know, thanks so much, Wanda, and I sincerely appreciate this. You know, the vision for this program was to provide a place of comfort, a place of respite, a place where all these frontline environmental warriors can come and listen to the words, you know, that are meaningful and visionary, you know, and look beyond the incoming administration's harsh rhetoric and looming barriers and such, you know, and providing folks, yes, with hope. You know, and the hope is within us. You know, the fact that we're going to persevere, the fact that we're going to stay on aim, the fact that we're going to stay on purpose, you know, the fact that the fact that we're going to be determined and intentional in every act, the fact that we're going to come together as coalitions and continue to build and such, because we have gone through so much, you know, over the years, and then finally one administration says, "Hey, I see you. I'm going to give you the resources that you need, you know, to continue to fight." And then now we have an incoming administration that says, "Hold on, you know, we're gonna take some of that back from you, you know, et cetera, et cetera." So now is the time for us to come together in a meaningful way, in a purposeful way, and such, and understand that these issues are bigger than us, and we've got to keep on keeping on.
I love it. I love it. Thanks so much, Gary. How can people stay connected with you?
Hey, guys, hit me up at Gary Harris at gharris@csc-atl.org. You can even text me on my phone at area code 404-936-0620. And then finally, Wanda, thanks so much. You know, without you, this platform would be possible, you know, and we need to continue to do this. So again, thank you so much for your care and concern about why we must care in our communities about climate.
Absolutely. You're more than welcome. Thanks, Gary. Thanks to all of our panelists. We appreciate you. And thank you to our audience for listening. Why Our Community Must Care About Climate. Thank you to my executive producer, Chantel. Thank you so very much. We'll be back on tomorrow. The conversation, great, amazing today. And we'll be back tomorrow with more of On Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes, the News and Talk 1380. WAOK, this is your friend and sister girl. Have a great one. I'm out of here.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Quality sleep isn't just about how long, but how well you sleep. And science proves temperature plays a massive role. ChiliPad by SleepMe is a precision temperature-controlled sleep system that cools or warms your bed so you can sleep hard and recover harder. And it's not just for pro athletes. Just set your temp from 55 to 115 degrees, and ChiliPad does the rest. Visit sleep.me and use code SLEEPCOOL20 for 20% off your first ChiliPad. That's SLEEP.ME for 20% off your ChiliPad. This special offer expires September 30th and cannot be combined with other offers.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.